I really enjoy my time to be here in front of you to bring a lesson. And this morning, if you want to be opening your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 1 is where our lesson will be coming from. Many years ago, when Carrie and I first started dating, things started to look like they were going to maybe get serious, maybe move in a certain direction, and we thought it would be good for me to meet her parents. So she invited me to Springfield, Missouri for a weekend to meet her family. This was a good weekend because her oldest brother was in town. His name is Rob, and he's a lawyer in Alabama, and they thought it would be good for him to meet me. I don't know why, maybe the intimidation, I'm not exactly sure, but he was going to be there, and Carrie's younger brother was also going to be there, who's a football coach in Missouri. And at the time, he was the star of the high school football team. He was the quarterback, the captain, all that kind of thing. And so they wanted me to come, and I went. And I was a little intimidated. I was a little nervous. And they knew that this was going to be the case. And so they invited me to play golf with them. The two brothers did. So we went to the golf course, and I was feeling a little nervous already because they both showed up in their high-dollar golf gear, with their cleats on and their fancy shirts and shoes. And I was wearing a t-shirt, gym shorts, and some old Nike running shoes. So I was a little bit apprehensive already. Well, my younger brother-in-law, now brother-in-law, Andy, he stepped up to the tee and lined up his shot and took a swing and hit it. Beautiful shot, probably 200 yards down the fairway. Just right in a good line of spot to the green. Beautiful shot. And at this point, my palms started sweating just a little bit. Rob gets up, and he takes his swing, and it was an even better shot, probably 30, 40 yards beyond where Andy's laid. And I'm starting to get nervous, because while I said I play golf, what I really mean is I play at golf. And so it was my turn in my gym shorts. And I step up there and I pull out my trusty Golden Bear M6 retail club. Actually, it wasn't even retail. I think someone gave this to me. And I step up and I line up my shot, okay? And I take a swing. And I swing and boom! Hit the ball. Beautiful shot. Way down the fairway, at least 30, 40 yards beyond their shot. At least that's what would have happened had I hit the ball. But to my shame, it was still there. So I kind of, you know, I did one of those things where you're like, that was a practice swing. I wasn't really trying for that. So they're not saying anything. So I sit there and I take another swing. And again, I miss the ball. And so I step back and I kind of like play with my club like somehow it's its fault. And take a look around and, okay, I shake it off. Third time's a charm, right? Finally. I rear back and I swing and I make contact. Finally make contact with the ball. And you know what the best part about it was? I only had to walk like 15 yards to take my next shot. It was just right there. It was one of those days. The whole day was that way. They had been gracious enough to pay for a golf cart. Unfortunately, I didn't need it because I just did this. Switchbacked all the way down the course. I was so embarrassed. This is how they are going to remember me by, right? They were really good about it. They didn't give me too hard a time, but it was so embarrassing. And I thought to myself about on the, somewhere around the 16th, somewhere around there, I was just like, this is it. I am never playing golf ever again. And then something happened. What happened, those of you who are golfers? What happened that made me keep this club and not snap it in half? What is it? That one shot, right? That one shot that you hit on your worst day, and it feels good. It didn't throw your back out of place like the rest of the shots that you took. And it went where it was supposed to go, and it just felt right. This morning, I want to ask you, what is your one shot? What is it that keeps you coming back? In golf, it's the one shot. That's what keeps me playing. But in your Christian walk, what is it that makes you decide to be here on a Sunday morning early when it's raining outside? What is it that makes you get up every day and decide to serve God? What is your one shot? For me, it's very simple. It is love. Love is what keeps me coming back. I would hope and pray that love is what keeps you coming back. And love is simple, right? Well, maybe not so simple. Story number two. Many of you don't know this about me, but before I met Carrie, I was deeply in love with another. We would take long walks together. We'd take her by the hand and lead her everywhere I wanted to go. Spent a lot of time talking. Spent a lot of time just being together. It was a wonderful, wonderful relationship. I can still remember her and what she looked like. White frame with fiery red. And I remember her name. And I brought a picture just to show you. Her name was Red Wagon, Radio Flyer. I loved that wagon. Sometimes she would carry things for me, and sometimes she would even let me ride in her as we would walk around our neighborhood. Probably you were thinking, what is he doing? Talking about this ex-love of his while his wife is here in the audience. But love sometimes isn't simple, is it? It can be confusing. It's the same word that we can use to describe how we feel about our parents that we use to describe how we feel about the last hot dog we just had. Or maybe how we feel about watching grown men grow up in football pads and smash into each other on a gridiron. I love football season. Love can be something so simple as what a husband feels for his wife. Or something so complex as what a wife feels for her husband. I want to assure you that this morning is by no means another sermon on the many forms of love. All the different things that love means, agape and eros and all those kinds of things. This morning is something different. This morning, we're going to talk about a love that is simple. A love that we can understand. A love that is easy. A love that 1 John describes, chapter 1, or chapter 3, verse 1. What kind of love the Father has given to us that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The kind of love I'm talking about this morning is the kind of love that says, I need you. I choose you to be mine. The kind of love that says, I want to take you and I want to make you one of my own children. Those of us who are parents understand what that kind of love is like. But ours is something different. Because God chose us to be His. God chooses you and I to be adopted into His family. Paul wrote to the Ephesians, he says, He foreordained us into adoptions as sons through Jesus Christ unto Himself according to the good pleasure of His will. He wanted you, and He wanted me. I have a friend of mine that I went to college with who is adopted. And I called her this week and I asked her, what is it like? What does it feel like? What is your relationship like with your parents being adopted? I asked her if she would write a few words for me, and this is what she wrote. When you're 18 months old, you can't tie your shoes, you cannot express yourself eloquently or determine the best choices for your life, and you definitely cannot imagine the blessings that God has in store for you. When I was 18 months old, I gained a new last name, two older brothers, adoring parents, and a rural 10 acres in Kansas to call my own. I found a family through Colorado Christian Services. That was the first time I was adopted into a loving family. 13 years later, on April 4th, I was immersed into Christ, and for the second time, I was adopted. Though I had a toddler's memory, the day my new parents came to get me is forever in my mind. I was wearing a frilly dress, and I had a porcelain doll that my foster sister Tracy had given me to remember her by. I remembered standing on the bed with her in front of me and she was crying, and that's my only memory of that day, but that's always what I see when I look back on that time. The other memory that will always be in my mind is the day I gave my life to Christ. I'd been thinking about it for months. My parents had instilled in me from the very first day that God was to be the center of my life. I was ready. I looked at my parents in the crowd and I saw their tears on their faces. And I realized that they meant more to me than anything else. I rose up out of the water and the tears turned to smiles. My new brothers and sisters rejoiced, and I knew that I'd made the most important decision of my life. I have never heard or known of an unhappy adoption story. Adoption is all about being wanted. about being cherished, taken care of, and loved intensely. With the multitudes of lessons my parents have taught me over the years, I know now in adulthood that my Father, my God, has brought me through even more. He craves my attention. He prepares a great path for me, and He cries when I stray. Being a part of His family has been the greatest joy and journey of my life, and I know I've been doubly blessed with two beautiful adoption stories. I am wanted. I am cherished. I am taken care of, and I am loved intensely. Being His adopted child will be forever my greatest joy. What does it mean to be adopted into God's family? God has loved us so much that He wants us to be a part of His family. So what does that mean? It means that we are heirs of His. To be in His family means that we are heirs with Christ. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 5. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable, undefiled, and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you who are protected by the power of God through a faith for salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. So what is that inheritance? What is this inheritance that they speak of, this inheritance of love that we have by being a part of God's family? I want you to notice that Peter says that because of God's mercy, He has caused us to be born again. When we hear born again, usually we think about our baptism. We think about having that new life, being the new creature, being a new creation. But also, to me, it suggests that we are born again into a new family as well. The passage in 1 John said that we are children of God, not just a child. We are not alone. We have a family that we can rely on. Because of God's wonderful love and great mercy, He has given us each other. And it is truly a miracle. If you think about it, you look across this audience and you see that we have people from every kind of background you can imagine. We have old people, we have young people, we have people in the middle. We have people in every stage of life. We have people who think differently than others. We have people who believe different things about politics and all kinds of other things than other people do. Yet for some reason, all of us are able to coexist in this room without killing each other. And that's a pretty incredible thing, isn't it? God has given us each other to rely on. And I'm got to be honest, I don't know what it would be like to not have this family. Paul wrote to the Galatians and he said, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Can you imagine what it would be like if you didn't have your brothers and sisters in Christ? When Carrie and I were first married, we moved to Richmond, Virginia, 23 hours away from any family and anyone we ever knew. And it was lonely. It was scary. But we had a church home so that we knew we were always taken care of. I can remember the church secretary that I worked with one day. She called me on the phone and she said, Justin, would you mind meeting me halfway between your house and mine? And I said I would. I didn't want to because back in those days, we didn't have very much. Well, we had a lot of debt, but we didn't have much else. And I didn't really want to afford the gas money to go out there, but I thought she wouldn't ask if it wasn't important, so I drove out to meet her. When I pulled up, she opened up her trunk and her back seat, and her car was full of groceries, full of coolers with meat and all kinds of things. And I just started crying because I hadn't told anyone that we just didn't have much money and we weren't able to buy groceries that month. I just said, how did you know? She said, well, you've been eating peanut butter sandwiches for the last month, so I figured something was up. And she said, Justin, would you just please tell me if you ever need anything? You can rely on me. That's a lesson that has stuck with me. Everywhere we've gone, we've been away from home, but we've always had a home. We've always had people we could trust. When we first moved here, I got really, really sick one night. Just so sick, I had to go to the emergency room. So it's about 11 o'clock at night, and we have a one-year-old little girl asleep in her bed. What do? Carrie called Deborah Nickum and said, Deborah, Justin's sick. I got to take him to the emergency room. And she said, I'm putting my shoes on. I'll be there as soon as I can. She stayed there till 2 a.m. in the morning while I was in the emergency room. I just don't know what it would be like to not have that. I don't know what it would be like to not be able to call anyone in this room and know that you would do whatever it took to help me. I can't imagine the people out there who don't know that. We had some friends in Virginia who didn't have any family like us, and they had no one to turn to. No one they could rely on. God's family is such an amazing blessing. But more than that, God's love and His inheritance is also one of a better life, a life filled with hope. Peter goes on to say in our passage, "You are born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, it is undefiled, and it is unfading and kept in heaven for you." Our inheritance is one that will never fade away. Our inheritance is one that when we are in our darkest days, when we are experiencing grief and trials of all kinds, we can know that God is waiting for us in heaven. Waiting for us. It's a life that we can live and know that no matter what we face, we've always got hope. I want to share a story with you of a girl by the name of Karen. This was one of Carrie's undergraduate students, and she had had a hard life, but she was turned around and living better, and she wrote this. She said, "When I got tired of trying to get into the front row seat of hell, my family actually came and found me on the streets of D.C., an alcoholic and a drug addict. I went into detox and then into treatment. One day I was laying in bed wishing I was dead because the withdrawals were so bad and I was so sick. I was leaning over, throwing up in a trash can, and a counselor came and said, 'Karen, I want to give you something to think about for a few days.' I only wanted him to go away, so I thought I would just give him what he wanted, and I said, 'What?' He said, 'I want you to know that your best thinking got you here.' That hit me like a ton of bricks. I had been self-will run riot and needed to do someone else's will. Was this truly the best I could do with myself? A day or two later, I told him he was right and asked for help. He explained to me that there was a God and that, guess what? I wasn't him. So to let God do my thinking from now on, I have, and it's worked. I have a hope in my life that I never knew could exist. I believe differently today than I did when I was 14, and so I do differently. Jesus taught me how to be spiritual and to change from the inside out." Hope gives us a reason. Hope helps us go on. Hope keeps us uplifted. 1 John chapter 4, 9 and 10, "God's love has been made known in us that we might live through Him. Love is in this, not that we have loved God, but that He Himself has loved us and sent His Son as the offering for our sins." Karen finally understood that. She finally understood what it was to live for someone else beside yourself, to live inside of God's love and His hope. The psalmist said, "Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you." We also are under God's protection. Part of what His love does for us and being in His family protects us. He goes on to say that this inheritance is reserved in heaven for us who are protected by the power of God through faith. April 1st, 1934, is known as Black Sunday. This was sort of the climax, the apex of what was known as the Dust Bowl. I don't know if you've heard of this, I'm sure you have, but the Dust Bowl occurred in the 1930s in Oklahoma, western Oklahoma. People didn't know what they were doing. So they would plant crops without rotating, and the dust, the topsoil just turned to dust. And if you've ever been through Oklahoma or in Oklahoma, you know one thing about it. It is incredibly windy. And because of this wind, you see this. Look at that dust storm. We're not talking about just a little dust swirling through the air. We're talking about incredible, incredible amounts of dust. My grandmother lived through this time, and she told me that it was really scary because she could be in her yard playing, not 10 yards from the house. One of these dust storms would blow up, and she literally could not find the front door. That's how terrible it was. She told me about how her mother used to wet down sheets and blankets at night. And she would put them over the crib where the baby slept. And she would put them over the canopy beds where they slept. I said, "What did that do?" She said, "Well, in the morning we would wake up and there would be about an inch of dust on top of those sheets." She said, "Without those blankets, we wouldn't have survived the night. Without those blankets protecting us, we'd have been breathing in all of that dust." I thought about that, and I thought about how alike that is to what God does for us. Protects us in the dark. wraps us up and keeps us safe. Being a part of God's family is an amazing, wonderful thing. God's love acts as that wet blanket that takes care of us, even when we don't know we need to be taken care of. We also have access to God's salvation. He said that there is a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. With every adoption process, there is something that has to be done or something that has to be paid. My brother and sister-in-law, for a long time, couldn't have children. And so they looked into the adoption process. And they went through this for probably a year or 2 years, only to find out that they weren't going to be able to adopt a child. They had to pay money, they had to give time, they had to prove that their home was fit to have a child, and there were all these things that they had to go through, and yet still, it wasn't quite enough. So what is it that God had to do? What is it that He had to pay to be able to receive us as adoption, be able to receive us as children through adoption? I think we all know that answer. He had to give His Son. Galatians chapter 4, 3 through 6. So we also, while we were children, were held in bondage under the elemental things of the world. But when the fullness of time came, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, so that He might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive adoption as sons. Because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. John put it a little more simply in his book, quoting Jesus, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him would not perish but have everlasting life." If you want to know how simple God's love is for us, all you have to do is look at Christ on the cross. If you want to know the reason that we're all here this morning, the reason that I get up every day and decide to commit my life to Christ yet again, all you have to do is look at Jesus on the cross. If you want to know how simple God's love, how easy God's love is to understand, just look at what He did for us. I want to close by reading the words of a song. The boy only wanted to give his mother something, and all of her roses had bloomed. Looking at her as he came rushing in with them, knowing her roses were doomed, all she could see were some thorns buried deep, and the tears he cried as she tended his wounds, and she knew it was love. It was one she could understand. He was showing his love, and that's how he hurt his hands. He still remembers that night as a child on his mother's knee. She held him close and opened her Bible and quietly started to read. Seeing a picture of Jesus, he cried out, "Mama, He's got scars just like me." And he knew it was love. It was one he could understand. He was showing his love, and that's how he hurt his hands. If you want to know what love is, look no further than Jesus Christ on the cross. We're going to sing the song we sang just before the sermon again. And I want you to think about the words of this song. How deep the Father's love for us. As we sing the song, I want you to reflect on the things that God has done for you. The hope that He gives you. The better life that He gives you. The salvation He offers you. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't yet accepted adoption, that you think about that this morning. If you haven't yet become a part of His family, we encourage you to do that through baptism. Please come while we stand and sing.